Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Monday, February 10, 2025. The Commission of Kajukeji County accuses rebels of the National Salvation Front of attacking his area on Sunday.
What happened? It's the barracks of Jalimo that was attacked on Sunday morning. They made a surprise attack on the barracks and killed three soldiers and two children of the soldiers who got burnt in the house.
And the Catholic Bishop of Malakal Diocese calls for an end to child abductions in South Sudan.
People are being treated as goods. The church is saying no. And all of us should open our eyes to this exploitation, to this new slavery.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Commission of Kajukeji County says rebels of the National Salvation Front attacked a barracks, leaving three soldiers dead and two children who were allegedly burned to ashes. Several calls to the National Salvation spokesman, Samuel Suba, went unanswered. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Residents of Jalimo village were caught up in an attack by gunmen on the barracks of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF. Colonel William Wiwal, an SSPDF officer based in Jalimo, says the attackers killed the soldiers.
What happened? It's the barracks of Jalimo that was attacked on Sunday morning. They made a surprise attack on the barracks and killed three soldiers and two children of the soldiers who got burnt in the house. One soldier is the son of Loopo and his child, a brother to the youth leader of Kajukeji, and another soldier from Warap. The soldiers are pursuing the attackers but have not found them yet.
David Lisi, the commissioner of Kajukeji County, accused the rebels of the National Salvation Front, or NAS, for the attack. He says civilians affected by the violence are sheltering at a health center and need urgent humanitarian assistance.
After the attack, they went to the village and begin random burning of houses. So they burned about 15 families, and right now, as I speak, 72 people are displaced. All their foods and belongings are burnt. They have gathered at the primary healthcare center of Jalimo. Any grass that is being cut for building, they destroy, and they say people should go back to the camp. They don't want the people of Kajukeji to stay in Kajukeji.
Lisi says South Sudan People's Defense Forces are pursuing the attackers to prevent further assaults by the rebels.
We are on top of the situation, and the security apparatus, the SSPDF, are pursuing them. So there is no cause of alarm because we know the will not return. The issue was because the force that was in Jalimo was just very small, and that is why they were able to do all those nonsense. But now we have done our reinforcement and the forces are behind them, I know there will be no more fear.
Samuel Suba, the NAS spokesperson, did not answer several calls for comments. Previous fighting between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the National Salvation Front, or NAS rebels, in Kajukeji has killed many residents and displaced others to refugee camps in Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
The Catholic Bishop of Malakal is calling on security forces to fight human trafficking and child abduction. The UN says 258 cases of abducted children were reported in Upper Nile in 2022. Mamer Abraham Kwart reports for VOA from Malakal town.
The United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says 258 civilians were abducted by armed groups in Upper Nile State in 2022. The UN alleges that some of the abducted women and girls were subject to sexual violence. The Bishop of Malakal Diocese, Stephen Nyodo, says security forces must address and end human trafficking and child abductions in South Sudan.
People are being treated as goods. The church is saying no. And all of us should open our eyes to this exploitation, to this new slavery. We have in our country some issues of child abduction that should be condemned and brought to an end. This violates human rights, child rights. And we, in uniform and as citizens, we should work hard that such kind of immoral behaviors should come to an end.
The Commissioner of Police in Upper Nile State, Joseph Mayena Khan, says residents of the town should report abuses to senior police officers.
Let us build a very strong nation with a very strong army.
Let us build a very strong nation with a very strong army, with a very strong police, with very strong prisons, with a very strong civilians. A nation like this is a very strong nation. If Sudanese have a problem and have come to us, yeah, they must be respected. If someone goes to your house looking for food, give him food. If you are from custom and you need money, don't take money from vulnerable refugees. Don't tax refugees coming from Sudan.
The police commissioner urges parents to watch their children who could be recruited by gangs that are attacking residents of Malakal. Dan Omar, UNMISS representative in Malakal, says the United Nations peacekeepers are building the capacity of the police to respond to human rights violations.
We have basically embarked on capacity building of the National Police Service. We are building the capacity of the police service regarding issues to do with human rights, integrity, and professionalism. We want to see that our police service is very professional and very accountable to the public they serve.
The governor of Upper Nile State, James Odok Oyai, spoke at the Catholic Church Silver Jubilee. He says security forces should not harm their relationship with civilians in Malakal town.
If you leave the police, you return as a civilian. If you leave the army, you will become civilian. If I leave my position of the governor also, I shall become a civilian. If you destroy your relationship with civilian, you will be a shame among civilians. Offer this protection. It is to the civilian. The khaki was given to you to protect the Republic of South Sudan. And to whom will you offer this protection? It is to the civilian.
Amnesty International's report for March 2024 says South Sudan lacks freedom of expression and access to information, including arbitrary arrest and detention of journalists and civil society activists. For VOA News, I am Amer Ibrahim Court, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
The South Sudan peace talks in Kenya between the South Sudan government and the groups considered to be peace holdout adjourned for the third time over the weekend. Pagana Mum is leader of the United People's Alliance, an umbrella group of seven political parties. He tells my colleague James Batty that South Sudanese should intensify their efforts until a sustainable peace and good governance is achieved in the country.
The talks broke down because the government delegation decided to interrupt the discussion. We were discussing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan and the relationship between the Tumaini consensus and the RRCs, the agreement that they failed to implement. And while we were discussing, the government abruptly informed us that they were going out of the talks, that they're returning to Juba, and that's how the talks ended. And even when we tried to reach a joint declaration, the objective to a declaration, they also could not agree with us and the mediation on a joint communique.
Could it be the government walked out because you made certain demands to be represented in the current government?
We did not discuss anything about government formation or participation in government. We were discussing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan and how to resolve those root causes to end the persistence of conflict in our country.
What do you see as the root causes of the conflict? Because if I'm not mistaken, these issues have been in the discussion for a while now.
Well, one of the major root causes is political and leadership crisis in the country, which is resulting from leadership failure and lack of vision, loss of vision that would have guided the country towards a state and nation building in South Sudan. Then there is a persistent power struggle.
Did the government say while they were walking out of the meeting, did they give you any reason?
Well, they said that they were going back to extend themselves into power. You remember sometime in September they extended themselves in government, and by the 22nd, that extension is what they are focused on.
Do you think the meetings in Nairobi have any more purpose left? Because they have been going on for a while now.
Well, we have been negotiating for more than 10 months, so it's almost going to a year. We have actually made a lot of progress, agreed to Tumaini consensus agreement, which would have brought peace to the country. Unfortunately, the government reneged from this agreement, forcing us and the mediators to begin the talks from the beginning. And when we started to discuss those issues from the beginning, the government walked out.
What do you see as the hope now for South Sudan? Because we understand this country is supposed to be going to an election perhaps this year. What is the hope for the country?
The only way out left for the people of South Sudan is to intensify the struggle for sustainable peace and good governance in South Sudan.
That's Pagan Amum, leader of the United People's Alliance, an umbrella group of seven political parties. South Sudan government delegation were not immediately available to comment on Pagan's statement. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, instability is looming in the East African community. Find out why after the break. The U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz responded Sunday to critics of the Gaza takeover plan that U.S. President Donald Trump suggested last week. On the ground in the Middle East, the Israeli-Hamas truce resulted in another successful hostage-prisoner exchange. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias has more.
The Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal continues to hold. Israeli troops withdrew Sunday from the Netzarim corridor that divides the Gaza Strip, and entire Palestinian families made their way back home to northern Gaza. What lies ahead for Gaza's inhabitants after the war ends, however, remains an open question. U.S. President Donald Trump has floated the idea of Gaza's population resettling in other countries and the United States taking over the Gaza Strip to rebuild it. Trump's National Security Advisor Mike Waltz responded Sunday to critics of the plan. He appeared on NBC's Meet the Press.
You can't get to post-construction. Yes. You can't make this the Paris of the Mediterranean like Beirut was back in the 70s and give these people a better life if you've got 1.8 million people living in absolute squalor in mountains and mountains and mountains of debris. For anyone, the media included, that doesn't like what he is proposing, come to us with a better plan.
Trump's plan has received support inside Israel, but the Arab world and the Palestinian leadership categorically reject it. Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour.
We need to rebuild the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is a very precious component of the land of the state of Palestine. It is part of our homeland, and we don't have a homeland other than the state of Palestine.
Meanwhile, Israelis celebrated the release of more hostages this weekend. Five Thai workers who had been held by Hamas for more than a year reunited Sunday with their loved ones. And 183 Palestinian prisoners also reclaimed their freedom as part of the deal. Talks on the second phase of the Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal could resume in Qatar as soon as this week. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
From U.S., we go to East Africa, where analysts say Kenya and other East African countries are affected by the declining movement of goods and services to and from the Democratic Republic of Congo. On Saturday, African leaders called for a ceasefire in the civil war in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Kenya and other neighboring countries are bearing the effects of intense violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The war in Goma is compromising the goal of a unified East African community with the free movement of people, goods and services. The Goma region has been living with uncertainty for the longest time now, with no solution from the East African community. Economist Ali Kansacho says the economic state of DRC and the region will solely depend on whether the current situation intensifies or de-escalates.
Although we've seen a significant escalation in the situation in the last few weeks, this has been ongoing for quite some time. So, you know, I think the economic fallout from this, the Jambojet cancelling their flights, will mean some economic slowdown.
Many countries within East Africa that depend on Congo for exports and imports are in limbo, with countries like Uganda counting losses. Sacho says the people of Goma have not benefited much from the region, which is rich in resources.
If you look at something and test it by the outcome, there's been zero outcome in terms of stabilizing that part of the world and allowing people to benefit in what is a very economically rich geographical area.
The war in DRC is a hindrance to the country's economy across all sectors. Mining has been the most affected as the country is not able to utilize its natural resources due to instability and violence. On Saturday, Kenya's President William Ruto, in a meeting in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, said the DRC is in a crisis and the area requires an immediate solution.
It is clear that the conflict in DRC is complex, delicate, protracted, and involves multiple actors pursuing different interests. The issues at stake span a wide historical, economic, and political spectrum, run back in time for many decades, and spill across national and regional borders. There is also a clandestine international dimension at work whose persistent, cynical, and destructive effects must neither be underestimated or ignored any longer.
In seeking a lasting solution, the regional leaders expressed support for resuming direct negotiations with all state and non-state parties, including the M23 and existing regional mediation frameworks. The DRC has, however, rejected any form of direct negotiations with the rebels. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi.
Still in East Africa, African leaders are calling for an immediate ceasefire and the resumption of the Luanda and Nairobi dialogue between the Democratic Republic of Congo and M23 rebels. The call came during the first ever East Africa and SADC Heads of State Summit to address the worsening crisis in eastern DRC. Moses Habyarimana reports.
The crisis in the eastern DRC is worsening after the M23 rebel group captured Goma, a key town in North Kivu province in the eastern part of Democratic Republic of Congo. This weekend, 14 African leaders from East African Community and South African Development Community met in Dar es Salaam to resolve the crisis that has persisted for more than two decades now. Kenya's President William Ruto, who is the chairman of the East African Community Heads of State Summit, called for the implementation of a lasting solution.
Our presence here underscores our consensus that the time for action is now. The lives of millions depends on our ability to navigate this complex and challenging situation with wisdom, clarity of mind, empathy for the millions whose lives and livelihoods have been plunged into uncertainty.
According to the United Nations, the number of people who have been killed in the attacks by the M23 rebel group since the capture of Goma is now close to 3,000 people. Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan is calling for an inclusive dialogue and says that the current crisis is affecting the regional trade and stability.
As regional leaders, history will judge us harshly if we remain still and watch the situation worsen day by day. And in line with the principle of African solutions for Africa's problems, our countries have a collective responsibility to ensure we urgently address the existing security challenges that have heavily impacted the well-being of innocent civilians.
The United Nations says that more than 100 female prisoners were raped and burned alive during the jailbreak in Goma, which is now controlled by M23. The Joint Regional Bloc Summit directed the resumption of the direct negotiations and dialogue with all state and non-state parties, including the M23, with whom the DRC government had declined to negotiate with last year. Dr. Nkere Ntanda is a professor of political science at the University of Kinshasa.
What it has taken now is the fact that the DRC comes to the table very, very weak, with parts of its territory occupied by the M23 that is being supported by Rwanda.
The current crisis in the Eastern DRC has brought in neighboring countries like Burundi and nations as far as South Africa, with a call for the international community to intervene. Hopes of the country's stability now lie on the two regional blocs and the Rwanda-Nairobi peace negotiations, which failed to bear fruits for almost 2 years now. Moses Aviarimana, for Voice of America.
On Friday, President Donald Trump issued an executive order inviting white Afrikaners from South Africa to settle in the United States. He accused the African National Congress-led government of unjust racial discrimination against the country's white minority. Trump's claims have led to mixed reactions in South Africa, as Darren Taylor reports.
The U.S. president's order says Pretoria's policies are designed to dismantle equal opportunity in employment, education, and business. The ANC's affirmative action laws give preference to black job candidates and to black students applying to university. Its black economic empowerment regulations promote black ownership of large enterprises. The ANC says the policies are necessary to undo the wrongs of apartheid, when whites were favored in all sectors of society. Trump, however, instructed U.S. authorities to offer asylum to Afrikaners on the basis that they are being persecuted because of their skin color. But at a media briefing in Pretoria on Saturday, Kali Krill, leader of Afrikaner rights organization AfriForum, said his people's future is in Africa.
Our people... In Afrikaans, the Afrikaner folk, became a people, yeah, on the southern tip of Africa. We did not develop elsewhere. We are not Europeans. We became a people, yeah, we are indigenous to this country and we are going nowhere.
The U.S. President's directive says South Africa's recently passed Expropriation Act enables the state to seize ethnic minority Afrikaners' agricultural property without compensation. Legal experts told VOA that Trump is technically correct, but that stringent conditions within the law and South Africa's strong independent judiciary means a state-led land confiscation campaign is highly improbable. Some parties, including the ANC's coalition partners, are going to court to oppose the act on the basis that it could be used to seize private property. Leader of the Solidarity Group, Flip Bass, agreed with Trump that ANC policies are unfair on white citizens.
We welcome the concern of imported Americans about our situation, but we believe that a solution must be found in South Africa. To put on record, we did not accuse the government of large-scale race-based land grabs. We did not and will not ask for sanctions against South Africa or that funds for vulnerable people be cut off by the U.S. government.
But Jacques Broederick, who leads a project providing protection to farmers, says the ANC is allowing widespread abuses of white landowners.
AfriForum's 177 neighborhood and farm watch structures countrywide are on the front lines when it comes to facing illegal land invasions regularly. These are not spontaneous acts of desperation. Land grabs are orchestrated and motivated by politicians who profit from this lawlessness. The ANC has over the years created a climate where illegal land grabs are seen as acceptable by some. When property owners seek assistance during land grabs, AfriForum has often seen firsthand how the South African Police Service refuses to take action.
President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration says it's dedicated to protecting private property rights. But Trump's order says the government is fueling disproportionate violence against white landowners. South Africa's violent crime rates are among the highest in the world, with white farmers often victims. But independent studies say no evidence exists of them being targeted any more than other groups. Trump's order also cut an estimated $440 million in annual aid to South Africa, most of it supposed to treat and prevent infectious diseases like tuberculosis and HIV. This, he says, is in response to aggressive actions by South Africa, like accusing US ally Israel of genocide in Gaza and reinvigorating relations with Iran. In a media statement, Pretoria said Trump's order lacks factual accuracy and fails to recognize South Africa's profound and painful history of colonialism and apartheid. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, February 10th, 2025. We now leave you with some actually traditional song. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio One here in Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Justin Twist, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump's surprising proposal that the United States should take over Gaza and rebuild it has raised many questions. But what cannot be questioned is the horror of Gaza's current condition after 16 months of war triggered by Hamas's brutal terrorist attack on Israel on October 7, 2023. And also beyond question is the axiom, as White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt noted, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
President Trump is an outside-of-the-box thinker and a visionary leader who solves problems that many others, especially in this city, claim are unsolvable.
Spokesperson Levitt said President Trump's proposal about Gaza was made with a humanitarian heart. At a press briefing with National Security Advisor Michael Waltz, Special Middle East Envoy Steve Witkoff, who recently returned from a trip to Gaza, described the devastation he saw there.
There's 30,000 unexploded munitions. It is the buildings that could tip over at any moment. There's no utilities there whatsoever. No working water, electric, gas, nothing. God knows what kind of disease might be festering there. So when the president talks about cleaning it out, he talks about making it habitable.
Special Envoy Witkoff emphasized that the president's is a long-range plan.
And the president is intent on getting it all done correctly. So to me, it is unfair to have explained to Palestinians that they might be back in 5 years. That's just preposterous. And so what we're trying to do is be transparent to these people.
The crucial issue to be solved, says Special Envoy Witkoff, is where the Palestinian people will go as Gaza is rebuilt. National Security Advisor Waltz said the United States is engaging with its allies in the region and looking to them for assistance.
We have to collectively solve this problem. Everyone's heart breaks
for this war that Hamas started. But now we have to collectively come up with some problems, and I think the president has taken a very common sense approach.
We've had the same people pushing the same solutions to this problem for decades, said White House Press Secretary Leavitt. And it's been made very clear to the president that the United States needs to be involved in this rebuilding effort to ensure stability in the region for all people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.